Florida Frontiers, the weekly radio magazine of the Florida Historical Society, is made possible in part by the Department of State, Division of Historical Resources, and the State of Florida. It's also made possible by the Jesse Ball DuPont Fund and by the historic Rossiter House Museum and Gardens in O'Galley, celebrating pioneer history, the natural environment, and women's history. Available for weddings and events at rossiterhousemuseum.org. This is Florida Frontiers, the weekly radio magazine of the Florida Historical Society, online at myfloridahistory.org. I'm Ben Brotmarkle, and coming up on the program, the Orange County Public School Board has sold the historic Hungerford School property to Dr. Phillips Charities. This week, the Association to Preserve the Eatonville Community is holding the 37th annual Zora Neale Hurston Festival of the Arts and Humanities on the site.
Because it's a new generation of people who are really very hungry to know about Zora Neale Hurston, who want to understand the significance and the preciousness of Eatonville as her hometown, because she does celebrate it in so much of her work.
When Colonial Plaza Mall was built in Orlando in 1956, it was the largest retail development in Florida and ushered in a new era of shopping malls.
They had noticed that there was more suburban development or at least being planned out that way. So they kind of hypothesized that Orlando's growth would continue east of downtown and somewhere on East Colonial. So that's why they chose that location.
All that ahead on Florida Frontiers.
When I get in Illinois, I'm going to spread the news about the Florida boys. Shove it over.
That's writer, folklorist, and anthropologist Zora Neale Hurston documenting a railroad work song that she collected near Lakeland, Florida in 1933. Her hometown of Eatonville is the oldest incorporated African-American municipality in the United States. This week, the Association to Preserve the Eatonville Community is presenting the 37th annual Zora Neale Hurston Festival of the Arts and Humanities. Last week, the Orange County Public School Board sold the historic Hungerford School property, where the Zora Festival is held, to Dr. Phillips Charities. N.Y. Nathiri is executive director of the Association to Preserve the Eatonville Community.
We have taken a principled stand about the whole process that the school board pursued. And we're trying to be very careful to make certain that we really have done the research to know how all of this has come about. Because in some very clear ways, it's been a private process. And that being the circumstance, as we say, ipso facto, that's a problem. Because We live in a society where the rule of law is very important. And I've been told by colleagues that the state of Florida has one of the most strict sunshine statutes in the country, that really public agencies are obligated. They must conduct their deliberations in full transparency.
The Robert Hungerford Normal and Industrial School was established in 1897 to serve African-American students. It was created using Booker T. Washington's Tuskegee Institute as a model. Orange County Public Schools took over Hungerford in 1950. It was closed in 2010 and demolished a decade later. Some Eatonville residents support Dr. Phillips Charity's plan to build affordable housing and a museum on the site. Historic preservationist N.Y. Nathiri says that she's been down this road before.
It's important for the public to know that some of the characterizations about how there is, you know, such a great, how would you say, such a great difference of opinion in Eatonville. Yes, there is some difference of opinion. And I can say this as having been very much involved in the struggle to make certain that Orange County back in the 1980s did not five lane the two lane road that is in downtown Eatonville, East Kennedy Boulevard. I think that during that time, there were people who there were there was a segment of the community that thought that the four lane, the five laning would be good because they said it will bring people to Eatonville. It will ultimately what I'm essentially saying is that I believe that everyone, literally everyone in Eatonville, wants to see something good happen in Eatonville. There is no difference about that. There's no controversy about that. It's just that some people feel that what they are hearing, it sounds good, and so let's do that. Let's do that because ultimately it's going to be good for Eatonville. All right. And some of that they are hearing has been purposely positioned for that. But then as you look more carefully, you do the analysis and all of that, then you wonder. And I would say that that was the same today. That is equivalent to the situation that had occurred in 1988, 89, 1990, that there were some people who thought that the five laning, as I said, was going to be good for Eatonville until they understood that no one was stopping in Eatonville with that five lane. They were just going to go right straight through. There was not going to be any business opportunity because that's not the way that the road design was configured. It was to move traffic as quickly as possible from one point to the other point. And I would say to you, and to your audience respectfully, that in a way is similar to the analysis about the deliberation and the determination by the Board of Orange County Public Schools to take the path that they did.
Dr. Phillips Charities has issued a statement that says in part that they are, quote, committed to stewarding the Hungerford property with care, transparency, and deep respect for Eatonville's history. With the contract now executed, the next 14 to 18 months will be dedicated to exploration and collaborative planning to ensure the land's future is responsibly aligned with community goals. This initial phase will focus on listening, research, and feasibility, supported by the formation of a community advisory committee that brings together residents and subject matter experts to inform the planning process, end quote. NY Nethiri says that any meaningful discussion about development in Eatonville needs to address the town's unique position as a destination for cultural and heritage tourism.
But we're talking about economic sustainability. And we're talking about the fact that we live in Orange County, Florida, one of the top three to five global destinations for tourists in the world. And we're talking about the fact that within the hospitality industry, there's what's a niche industry called cultural heritage tourism. And the profile for these people is a marketplace where they are willing to invest their time and their pocketbooks to a greater extent than tourists who go to the attractions. They are interested in authentic experiences. They want to engage in activities that it's really lifelong learning. In all of these conversations, you don't hear the name Zora Neale Hurston. Zora Neale Hurston is a brand. It is a global brand. And yet we're not talking about that. It's a kind of, well, Eatonville, you're on your last legs and woe is me and whatever, just whatever we can give you should be glad to take. So that's a problem. It's also a problem when people in historic preservation, community planning and landscape architecture, people who have expertise at the state and national levels, when they look and give a kind of analysis that says the community planning process that has been touted, that really is not appropriate it's out of date, and it's in it just does not stand the test of best planning. When you hear these kinds of comments, then you really are obligated to step back and to look very carefully at what you're being presented. Now, as we go through this, as we continue on this process, hopefully, the people who are at the helm at this point, namely the Dr. Phillips Charities, hopefully they will be amenable to this kind of discussion, because only in that way can the best interests of Eatonville be really be attended to.
This week, the Association to Preserve the Eatonville Community is presenting the 37th annual Zora Neale Hurston Festival of the Arts and Humanities. For most of those 37 years, the event has taken place on the former Hungerford School property and along Kennedy Boulevard.
And of course, the Zora Neale Hurston Festival, which is America's longest running arts and humanities festival, celebrating the cultural contributions of people of African ancestry throughout the diaspora. That's actually who we are. We are this little organization that has produced over three decades an event that attracts all kinds of people because of its intellectual and creative content. All right. Now I can say that to you, and I can talk about this to your audience in that way, because a lot of us are just nerds and super nerds. But that, I mean, that really is a, that's really the case. We have been able to create an intellectual and creative product that has longevity, that has sustainability. And this festival is going to be one of the outstanding ones. I have had the privilege of working with the team since 1988, and I know that we always work hard to present a quality product, and we have been successful in doing that. But I also know that there have been certain festivals that lift. They just lift up, and this one is one of them. And I think in part it's because we are going back in some ways to introduce to a new generation. I think that's really what it is, because it's a new generation of people who are really very hungry to know about Zora Neale Hurston, who want to understand the significance and the preciousness of Eatonville as her hometown, because she does celebrate it in so much of her work, that we have this opportunity, and we're really seeing it.
This year's Zora Festival itinerary includes a musical review of songs collected by Zora Neale Hurston performed at Rollins College, an exhibition of mixed media art by Mary Graham at the Zora Neale Hurston National Museum of Fine Art, and the outdoor festival with arts and craft vendors, food, and educational displays. The Florida Historical Society will have a large tent at the festival, as we have for nearly two decades.
The people who come to festival, outdoor festival, the arts, are not just interested in singing and dancing and buying food. They want food for the mind. In addition, we will have wonderful programming for K-12, pre-K through grade 12. The Zora STEM Hub is going to really feature science, technology, engineering, and math within a community context. Just so much is going to be featured there. Another new element is we are going to open up to the public a bit of our archival project that it's called Community Archives, and it comes as a result of a grant from the Andrew W. Mellon Foundation, where we are going through our archives over the 35, 37 year period of time, and organizing, vetting them, working with the Orange County Regional History Center to hold them until we can actually build the Zora Neale Hurston campus for the arts, humanities, and the sciences. That is our that that's a that's one of our immediate goals, let's say in the next 5 years.
The academic portion of the Zora Festival includes the Africa America Women Economic Forum at Rollins College celebrating female entrepreneurship, and the two-day placemaking conference entering the Zoraverse, People, Places, Spaces. Enwine Theory.
Our placemaking conference will start off with a 3-hour mobile tour showing the historical link between Maitland and Eatonville. And then we will go to the Macedonian Missionary Baptist Church for luncheon presentation by Dr. Fred Opie, who has written a book called Zora Neale Hurston on Florida Food. And our luncheon is going to be inspired by recipes that come from that research. So that will be quite delicious. In addition, Dr. Deborah Plant, who is an independent scholar, independent Hurston scholar, will be presenting the Zora Neale Hurston Arts and Humanities Lecture. And then to end that Thursday, we will be at the Eatonville Public Library branch of the Orange County Library System, where a panel of Eatonville residents will be talking about a project that they did in connection or in collaboration with the Eatonville Public Library branch. So that's just day one.
New at this year's Zora Festival is the event Cotton Club Reimagined, which celebrates the history of the Harlem Renaissance of the 1920s and 30s, where Zora Neale Hurston was a leading literary figure.
On Saturday evening, and this will be a favorite, and we want to also acknowledge the fact that the Florida Historical Society will be recognized at what we call Cotton Club Reimagined. That will take place. And I'm going to caution your listeners as I say this. I'm not making a mistake. It will be 9 p.m. to 1 a.m. at the Eola View, which is a former location of the University Club in Orlando. What Cotton Club Reimagine will be an immersive experience. And I don't mean in the, I'm not talking about the computer kind of immersion, but an immersive experience where we encourage our guests to dress in 1920s and 1930s era attire. We find that our audience really does enjoy experiences that let them engage themselves engage themselves in the programming. And so we will be doing that. There will be a live jazz band, the Jones High Alumni and Community Band, playing, as we say, real music, if I can date myself, with a real piano, and just a wonderful evening of entertainment. As I say, a highlight will be a toast to people who have really made just tremendous contributions in their field, as well as organizations and institutions, the town of Eatonville, the University of Central Florida, the Florida Historical Society, to acknowledge what it means to align with ideals that actually have made America the country that it has, the country that it is.
Enwine Athiri is Executive Director of the Association to Preserve the Eatonville Community. For a complete rundown of Zora Festival activities, visit zorafestival.org.
Can't you move it? Hey, or can't you try?
This is Florida Frontiers, the weekly radio magazine of the Florida Historical Society. I'm Ben Brotmarkle. Visit us anytime at myfloridahistory.org to find great books on Florida history and culture, watch our public television series Florida Frontiers, and much more. That's myfloridahistory.org. Colonial Plaza Shopping Center has evolved over the past 70 years. As Sebastian Garcia reports, Colonial Plaza is historically significant.
Rachel Williams serves as a historian for the Orange County Regional History Center. Rachel has written and presented about the history of Colonial Plaza, a strip mall located on Colonial Drive and Bumby Avenue in Orlando that once represented the largest retail development in Florida upon its inception in the mid-1950s. Colonial Plaza also symbolized a new era of shopping malls in Orlando, as previously, in the early 20th century, shopping took place in downtown districts, not in the pockets within suburban communities as we know today.
Shopping really occurred in central business districts, which is usually the downtown area, so along main streets, and a lot of those are even called Main Street. Orlando's Main Street has been Orange Avenue. People would go downtown, either they'd live downtown because depending on the year, Orlando was quite small, so they'd always live more or less, you know, within walking distance, and would come downtown, do their shopping. Shopping was different from what we think of it today. There'd be lots of small stores. So you'd have a pharmacy, a separate small grocery store, not like a supermarket, but a small grocery store. And sometimes I'd be separated by also having a butcher somewhere else. And then you'd have shoe repair, things like that. And it wasn't really until the early 1910s that we started getting department stores, which were even still smaller than what we think of department stores today. So very small business, very localized. However, still you have to go to separate stores for individual little things. There wasn't really a one-stop shop.
The one-stop shopping center emerged in the mid-20th century with the rise of suburban development. At the time of its opening in 1956, Colonial Plaza embodied Orlando's latest one-stop shopping center, at once reflecting and catalyzing Orlando's suburban growth.
When Colonial Plaza opens in 1956, the developer by the name of Michael Sudikow, he said that they chose Orlando because its central location in the state, but also the way that it was growing, kind of noting that especially that 20s to 30s growth, but it continued to grow even after, especially after the end of the Second World War, there was still population growth. So they'd noticed the growth within the city. And then particularly with that East Colonial location, they had noticed that there was more suburban development just, or at least being planned out that way. So they kind of hypothesized that Orlando's growth would continue east of downtown and somewhere on East Colonial. So that's why they chose that location.
In addition to its suburban location and store-to-store shopping in one place, other amenities, such as a roofed walkway within the structure to protect consumers from rain and sun, free parking, and lighting in the parking lot for nighttime shoppers, boosted these perceptions about Colonial Plaza as the future of retail shopping.
The grand opening was promoted in the local newspaper. The tagline was the one-stop shopping center of tomorrow that's here today. And it has like this picture where it's Colonial Plaza kind of like on the world, which leans into this whole idea that really brought this newness, this, you know, idea of the future and convenience to shoppers in the 1950s.
In 1962, Colonial Plaza expanded to a fully enclosed concourse with about 30 additional stores, maintaining its cutting-edge appeal from the 50s. This expansion also made Colonial Plaza the largest mall south of Atlanta and the second enclosed air-conditioned mall in Florida.
The first modern mall came about the same year that Colonial Plaza opened in 1956. This mall opened in Edina, Minnesota. And the idea of a modern shopping mall is completely indoors, air conditioned, and it's stores with anchor stores and smaller stores that are all connected by a concourse. So Colonial Plaza was not that, right? It was just a strip mall. But the development of that first modern shopping mall grew nationally. And so Sudikow, who still owned Colonial Plaza in the 60s, said, hey, I think we need to stay on track with this and expand and implement this indoor element. So they built backwards from the original strip of stores, created a concourse with about 30 other stores that ended at a four-story Jordan Marsh department store.
Colonial Plaza underwent further expansions in the 1970s and 1980s in an effort to keep pace with the retail and consumer trends of the time. By the mid-1990s, however, the rise of e-commerce, the oversaturation of malls in the Orlando area, and the decline of upscale department stores caused a complete redevelopment of Colonial Plaza.
We start to see the internet come about. We don't see the full force of online shopping yet. It's this new thing. We don't really know what it's going to be, but it has all these possibilities. I think they were probably seeing writing on the wall with the internet and shopping. Another thing was just we had too many malls. We had 10 by that time in the city. So it's just competition. But also you have changes in corporate structure regarding those anchor stores. At the same time, there's these new stores popping up, this idea of like, you know, these budget-friendly stores like Target and Kohl's coming about in comparison to these department stores, which can be perceived to be like more upscale. So there's a decline in consumers at those department stores. So with all of that in mind, it's decided in 94, 95 that Colonial Plaza will be demolished and redeveloped completely into a power center. So you're not really going to walk from one corner to the other through a parking lot. You're just going to drive. So there's no more pedestrian element to the power center structure. They kept like tiny portions of the mall structure. The current Barnes & Noble and Petco is part of that 1956 structure. The current Total Wine is part of the separated Belk from 56. So pieces of it still exist, structurally at least. The facade's completely different.
Although a few remnants of Colonial Plaza's original 1956 structure still exist today, the space evokes an important history to remember.
It embodies the growth of the city. It embodies the spread of our city limits, of the trend of shopping, along with suburban culture. It is a case study that you can find anywhere in the nation. But I think that Colonial Plaza is particularly interesting because the way that it fits into national retail trends and infrastructure trends too. So pulling everything into it between suburban growth, the ideals of Victor Gruen, and his vision of pedestrian-centered communities through the development of power centers. It is the embodiment of all of those ideas, which I don't think very many exist in terms of examples. I mean, not to the extent of Colonial Plaza, though, because of its growth of strip mall, indoor mall, weird mutant mall that keeps growing, and into the power center structure and still being relevant because of all of those transitions. I think that very few spaces embody all of those cycles. So I think that's why it's so interesting and important.
For Florida Frontiers, I'm Sebastian Garcia, a graduate history student, FHS Media Production Assistant, and history podcaster at the University of Central Florida, Department of History.
You've been listening to Florida Frontiers, the weekly radio magazine of the Florida Historical Society. Please join us right here again next week. Until then, find us anytime at myfloridahistory.org. Production assistance for Florida Frontiers comes from Sebastian Garcia, and the program is edited by Giselle Concepcion. Have a great week. I'm Ben Brotmarkle. Florida Frontiers, the weekly radio magazine of the Florida Historical Society, is made possible in part by the Department of State Division of Historical Resources and the State of Florida. It's also made possible by the Jesse Ball DuPont Fund and by the historic Rossiter House Museum and Gardens in O'Galley, celebrating pioneer history, the natural environment, and women's history. Available for weddings and events at rossiterhousemuseum.org.